You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We are fueled by your support. You make CJSF.
Simgigat sigram hana khkan kabawasas.
Okay, wishing you good life.
Kwikwi.
Yo week sis.
Tanet e negat dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and distributed by Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Yo weekses nugwa am Susanna Maya, Kayutlana Kwasanakwata, Kwakwakiwak, Kayutlana, Nishka, Kosalish, and Cree. Hello, how are you? I am Suzetta Maya, and I am from the Gwasala Nakwata Nation of the Kwakwakiwak people. My mother was Gwasala and Kosalish from Stamenas, and my father was Nishka from Lac aux Saules and Cree from Lac La Biche, Alberta. I raise my hands to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and acknowledge that I am speaking from their ancestral unceded territories, now commonly known as Vancouver, BC. I'm the founder of Smile Entertainment, a radio producer and host and reality TV personality and motivational speaker who has toured nationally. With 29 years in the music and entertainment industry, I'm dedicated to amplifying our voices, preserving our living history for future generations, and through music, media, storytelling, and community engagement, I strive to celebrate the strength, resilience, and cultural richness of Indigenous peoples while creating space for authentic representation, connection, healing, and growth. I believe our stories, teachings, and lived experiences are vital expressions of who we are and must continue to be shared, honored, and carried forward. I'm so excited about this journey with you, and I'm going to learn some Kwakwala. Is an urban Indigenous Kwakwakiwak person. I'm a baby speaker in our language, but I'm so excited to learn more about my identity, culture, protocols, and language. I am a Waukas from the Gwasala Nakwata Nation. My grandfather was George Waukas from Gwasala in Takush, colonial known as Smith Inlet. And my grandfather was also from the Moon family from Zawadenak in Kinkum Inlet. I am the daughter of the eldest daughter, Clara Richot, from the George and Eliza Waukas. My grandparents had 10 sons and 3 daughters. So my Gaiagum, my grandfather, George Waukas, was the first elected chief for 18 years when Gwasala and Nakwata were relocated to Tsokwadi in Port Hardy on the Kwagyut territory. I am your host for the Kwakwakiwak episodes of Words and Culture, so let me tell you about my homelands. The Kwakwakiwak people reside through the northern end of the Vancouver Island, from Comox to Alert Bay and Port Hardy, as well as surrounding islands and mainland territories, including Takush, my ancestral homelands. Coastal villages with big houses, totem poles, and fishing boats lining the shores sit among the lush cedar forests where deer, elk, bears, and cougars roam. Bald eagles soar overhead, and berries and traditional medicines flourish. This breathtaking homeland is a place of emerald green mountains, winding coastlines, countless islands and inlets, and sparkling waters, where the Kwakwakiwak people have lived in deep relationship with the land and sea since the beginning of time. The Kwakwakiwak are made up of 18 nations. For thousands of years, these nations have been connected through family ties, trade, potlatches, ceremonies, and stewardship of their territories. The language spoken by Kwakwakiwak is Kwakwala, with several dialects, including Bakwamkala, spoken by the Gwasala Nakwata peoples. In future episodes, we'll take a closer look at the various nations, its territory, history, language, and cultural teachings that continue to connect the Kwakwakiwak people today. But now I want to introduce you to my first guest, Pee Wee Alfred lives in Alert Bay. To get there from Vancouver, you need to take a ferry from Vancouver, Horseshoe Bay, to Nanaimo. Then drive up the island on Highway 19 for about 3.5 hours to Port McNeil. Then take another ferry over to the Cormorant Island, which takes about 40 minutes, and then you're there. I traveled with Words and Culture producer Kim Wheeler. While the town site of Alert Bay is fairly small, and they do have some street names, Pee Wee didn't know the name of her street, so she just stood outside her house until we drove by. Her house sits upon a road from the Umista Cultural Society and looks over the Alert Bay. I invited Pee Wee to introduce herself in our way.
Nuga am Kamenawadzi, Pee Wee Chalasum Chan. Gayuklan lach ga ilis, a winogusis at Namris. Gayish amch and lach kalukwis a winogusis a lawitsis. Namukmen chonukwi adidi, Michael Chalasum Chae. Hamat solach and chili adidi. Gayukli lach guai. He men umpi Wayne Alfred. Gayukli lach ga namris. Gayuklan a bump lach kalukwis a witnagwisis a lawitsis. My name is Great Thawing Power, Pee Wee Alfred. I come from here in Alert Bay, the land of the Namris people. I also come from Turner Island, which is the Tsleil-Waututh people. I have one son, his name is Adidi, which is a name of endearment. He got that name when he was born, and he comes, his English name is Michael. He's 22 years old, and he comes from Kingcome. My dad's name is Wayne Alfred, and he comes from here, Alert Bay. My mom's from Turner Island, which is over in the land of the Turner Island people.
I've known you as someone who's so powerful and impactful because today I've seen you, and since we were teenagers, mm-hmm. as someone who holds a lot of knowledge of who we are as a people. Mm-hmm. Can you share about your journey in learning your culture and your language?
I think really my language journey began because I had to bring my granny to church, which is my mom's mom. And everything that was done in the church was all in Kwakwala. And then I was just learning how to sing hymns. So that's kind of like, I was just kind of like following along and singing along with, you know, at church. But also in 1981, I believe, they opened a school down at the Tlisalagilok school. But that's when the writing system was just written. So they put a bunch of our people in the school and in this course that was led by a guy named Jay Powell, who helped develop this writing system and then teach our elders or people that wanted to participate and to become Kwakwala teachers. So after that, the school opened and then we all went to the school, but it was mandatory that you learned language. And so from there, my granny would she would teach you like the alphabet. So then she would go, you know, through each letter, and then you're learning colors and you're learning the weather. And then you're learning how to like communicate with in Kwakwala. So she would make us stand up and act. It would be like, she would go, "We class le." And then she would teach us, "Lachlen lacha kiwilas, we class le, lachlen lacha padilas, we class." And it was really, you know, so it almost had like kind of like a tune to it, so we're able to pick it up. And she would do all these like different sounds with us. So for instance, like the barred L is probably the hardest letter that you can make, right? So it's like so she would show us, like, she'd come up to our faces and go, but then she'd combine them with vowels. So then we're, like, straight into phonology. So then she'd go, and she'd walk back and forth in front of us. And so then we're just right into it, you know. And so she made it fun because she's such a powerful person that it was, like, you wanted to learn. she had us acting out quite a bit. And then we learned numbers. We had practiced the, you know, the month, the day, the week. And it was like a really consistent type, like, teaching. So then it was starting to be embedded in us. If you hear my granny speak, her voice is loud. People kind of get a little bit nervous. But it was like, you just learned from her. And a lot of people really remember. So, because I was kind of hot a lot growing up, like I was disobedient. How she punished me was I would go into her class with her. She would just sit there and she would make me like do all the painting for her. You know, when you're in the moment, you don't even know that's what's actually happening. Because you're just hearing it. And my granny would go, go hoot you the soup. And I'll be like, but she's like, well, what else do you think I'm talking about, you know? So I go in there, I'm like I don't know if this is what she's asking me. She pretty much taught me English, how to read, write, and then in Kwakwala too. But anyway, she was my inspiration growing up and my comfort and my love.
Pee-wee was 15 when she left Alert Bay for the first time. She went to Campbell River, which by comparison was a huge city with a population of over 21,000 people.
When I left Alert Bay, I was made fun of. Mm. You know, you're made fun of because you have a thick accent or you probably can get emotional. You get made fun of for being Bakum. Mm. You get made fun of because you sound Bakum. Sorry, guys.
The term Bakum refers to an indigenous person, a person of our people, like a Kwakwaka'wakw person.
So what I did was I switched it. So now I'm going to teach you guys how to be Bakum. So, you know, I always go, ho. Ho. You know, I always go, ho, or hmm. You know, so what I did was I started to just be myself. Yeah. This is how I knew I had an accent, though, because I didn't know. My friend said, what are you going to do today? I'm like, oh, I'm going to clean the clothes in my closet. So my accent, because it's like really...
Because they're so... And
I know, what? But our clean went to clean. And that's how I was knowing I have an accent. She'd be like,
you're bilingual.
Yeah. So I'm like, I didn't know. Or I'll be like... where are you going to go? I'm like, all the way down to Subway. And so my accent from Kwakwala goes into English. I'm going to go all the way down to the store. I gathered all the socks today. So I just learned to be myself and just teach them, you know, this is who I am. And I ended up making them right Bakumized. I made them be like me.
Yeah.
And that's how I found my comfort out of Alert Bay. Another situation was I was standing there and it was really cold. I'm like, howie, I said. But I'm like with all these people that don't, you know, mamasa. And they're like, I mean, brr.
You're teaching them like Kwakwala. They don't even realize they're learning.
That's funny. Yeah. Or I go, Sha'an.
Sha'an.
Sha'an after everything. So if I make a mistake, go, Sha'an.
And what does Kla'an, Kla'an mean again?
It's like honestly.
Like, oh, yeah. I always thought it was like, as if.
Kla'an. Sha'an. Or maybe... Or even yah.
Yah. Oh, yeah. We say yah a lot,
yeah.
Too.
Yah.
Yah. But you say it lower, Gwasala, yeah. Nagada, because it's like, no way.
Yeah.
Yah. Yeah, there's so many different, yeah. Tones to it, depending on, yeah, you know.
That's what we do, too. Like, you can go, hmm. That's mm-hmm. almost like a sarcastic, hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hmm. Like when you're joking, hmm.
Pee-wee has taught a lot of people how to be Bakum and how to speak Kwakwala.
So anyway, I was in Campbell River. I learned the International Phonetic Alphabet and I took a class with my granny, Daisy Seaweed Smith. I learned how to write with the International Phonetic Alphabet. I learned the Utmista orthography from my granny. In grade 8, I went to NIS, North Island Secondary School. When I got there, we got, bam, you're thrown into a French class, and I have never been exposed to French ever, but it was mandatory in grade 8. My teacher that was there, her name was Miss McAleer. I remember her very, you know, I really remember her because she allowed me to take Kwakwala. So the crazy part is when me and my cousin Tara would wander around here in Alert Bay, or just exposing myself, we're really rowdy and we'd go and break in these abandoned houses. So there's this house that, it's just, I could probably show you where it is. A house that burnt down. So nosy old us go break in there. And we're digging through all the stuff that's left over in this burnt house. I even remember the scent. But why I'm telling you that is because we find this box and it had a bunch of books in there. And so anyway, I'm like, cool. I don't even know what it is. So I made my own code breaker for it.
Phenetic. It was in Kwakwala?
Yeah.
The book?
So that was another thing was in 1888, a man named Alfred J. Hall wrote this book, and it was like a series of books. And so he lived amongst our people, and he was a reverend for the Anglican Church. And so he was studying, I don't know if he was an anthropologist or what he was, but he was a preacher who wrote Tsumkela, which is our church songs. Mm-hmm. So he translated the songs with the elders here, and they would have their church services in Kwakwala. So he really worked hard on these series books and their prayers and Bible. Wow. Everything was done in Kwakwala.
When you're talking about your younger self, about Kwakwala hymns, like that would be me. I learned just to sing it,
yeah,
like all the Kwakwala songs on the hymn from our church growing up in Port Hardy. Mm-hmm. But it must have been totally amazing to make that connection from the books that you saw in that burnt house,
yeah,
to the history of today, how these hymnals came to be.
Yeah, and we're using the same Kwakwala. It's really cool because like now I know how to read it because I've made this thorough code breaker where I'm able to read it now.
The residential schools, the potlatch ban, and colonial policies forced my grandparents, my mom, and my uncles, and many folks gradually stop speaking our language and practicing our ceremonies, creating generations of loss, shame, trauma, and disconnection from who we are as Kwakwaka'wakw people. Yet, despite those attempts to erase us, potlatches continued underground. Elders continue to speak our language. Kwakwala has survived and now is being taught in schools, universities, and from elders to young people. And for me, one of the first places I heard Kwakwala was in church, through hymns translated into our ancestral language by our people. Singing those songs awakened something in me, a deep connection to my ancestors, my identity as a Bakwam woman, and a desire to learn more about our language and culture. Today I see learning Kwakwala, whether through ceremony, community, or church hymns, as part of reclaiming what was taken and ensuring that our language and spirit continue to live on for future generations. Every song, every phrase, every conversation in Kwakwala is an act of reclamation and healing. I may not be fluent today, but I see myself as part of a generation helping to carry our language forward so that future generations will hear, speak, and live with pride. All of Peewee's learning of Kwakwala made her realize she wanted others to learn it as well. While her peers were going to work in banks or learning to become interior designers, she was learning how to be a teacher of the language. She worked in the community with women like Marion Warner and Sandy Willie, who taught through real-world examples like dancing, singing, and conversation. But her granny, Pauline Alfred, continued to be her biggest teacher.
My granny was teaching nighttime classes with a preacher named Stan Annenby. And Stan was teaching using this method where you're actually like using these lexicon strips. So they're just like almost like comic strips. Like say it was just a picture of someone washing their hands mm-hmm. or someone sitting there or whatever. But it was kind of like the visuals to the language he was speaking. Like say if I was going to teach you this. So it'd be like cup. Quatsta.
Quatsta.
Quatsta. Quatsta. Cup.
Quatsta.
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 Yeah. It was so repetitive uh-huh. that you just listen to it. But then it gets to sentences. Dahi dahwa quatsta. Dahi dahwa quatsta.
Dahi
dahwa.
Dahwa.
Quatsta.
Quatsta.
Dahi dahwa quatsta.
Dahi dahwa quatsta.
Then he approached me and said, I want you to come and move to North Dakota with me and come to the university so you can learn how to teach language and you can learn how to read and write with the international phonetic. Like it would be kind of like more in depth, like the phonology of the sounds. And so I was like, sure, you know. So that was with Julia Nelson, actually. She came as our elder, so she was there every day speaking language to us, and we would repeat. Wow. So every day we would have to listen to all the language, and then we would have to just repeat it back. And that's all I actually remember, a lot of reading and writing. And then we came home, and I tried to teach the method because they taught us the method.
By her own admission, when PB Alpha came home, she says she got rowdy. She started partying. She got pregnant. And for a bit, lost herself. But then the culture pulled her back and she got sober and formed a dance group with friends. Part of her traditional dances include hand movements. And like Pee-wee, I didn't know the hand movements actually had any meaning. In the summer months, Pee-wee and her friends would dance to entertain tourists and make a bit of money.
This lady looked at me, beautiful dance, but what does it mean? And then I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, I got all that knowledge when I was younger, but it kind of went, you know, you feel like it goes blank. It just disappears. That forced me to relearn again.
So many people, they don't know who Kwakwaka'wakw people are or about our culture. They may see big houses or totem poles or beautiful button blankets. We dance with our hands or we have masks, but it's language that ties everything. Can you share a bit about like our hand movements and how important it is to know language, to know what we are doing when we share and practice our sacred culture?
When we dance, we turn to our left, we turn to our heart. There's another side of that was told, if you turn to your right, it's like wishing death on yourself. So you turn to your left. But also you turn to, is it counterclockwise? And apparently it's the same way that Earth turns. So you're going to bring your hands, palms in, up by your temple, and you're going to flip your hands around and push out. So last dukla, a high la, gin, and you're going to bring it back to yourself, up by your forehead, down to your body. And that means everybody's come to see me. And then you're going to bring your hands up again, and then you're going to push up like a sun. And that means for the big people. The standing that you have amongst our people. So I'm going to sing it for you now. So, Las tu kola ahaila gin wala sala ahaila gin uwis talis lu wama mahe im hamaya mai. Ginswach me masala ha su gwen wala sala ha hai gen uis talis luama. So that's telling a story, but it's the same hand action, so everybody has come to see you, and it's the same motion where you bring your hands towards your eyes, push out, and then back to yourself again. And Yuitli Ne, so your hands go like this, Yuitli Ne. And that means that they're coming to see that professional dancer all over the world.
Spending time with Pee Wee Alfred in her home was amazing. While we were there, crows came to visit, landing on our roof, rifling through the recycling, just generally causing chaos, as little tricksters do. One of the biggest lessons I took away from the conversation with Pee Wee is that spending time with our elders is one of the most important ways to preserve and revitalize our language. I learned that there are many pathways to reconnecting with Kwakwala, whether through ceremony, song, church hymns, dance, or simply learning one word a day, and that it is never too late to begin that journey. Pee Wee has created a safe and welcoming space for people, especially those living away from their homelands, to learn language, culture, and dance. Through her online videos, she teaches everything from Kwakwala words and introductions to the meanings behind the songs, hand movements, dance steps, and stories, making our teachings accessible to people wherever they are. Her kindness, patience, and passion for sharing knowledge shine through everything she does. She lives her teachings, actively participates in potlatches, and honors a healthy way of life and serves as an inspiration to many. I have learned so much from Pee Wee. Her father, Wayne Alfred, a master carver whose artistry and knowledge are beyond words, and her late brother Marcus Alfred, a powerful Hamasa. Their family commitment to preserving and sharing our culture has touched countless lives, and I'm grateful for the teachings they continue to share with our people. The anti-laughs and respect for protocol truly helped me personally to come as you are. I hope you've enjoyed visiting with Pee Wee Alfred as much as I did. My name is Suzetta Maya, and you've been listening to the Kwakwala episodes of Words and Culture. To hear more episodes and visit with other nations like Anishinaabe or the Southern Tshone, please visit our website at www.wordsandculture.ca and follow us on socials. Just search Words and Culture. Gila kusla, hala kusla.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. It is distributed through Native Voice One, the Native American radio network. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Amia.
Yami.
Kachu nautano.
Halakasla.
Kikaya kitamatanuhua. We'll see you later.
This is Bird Note. Zoos can be great places to see birds, and not just in an aviary. Next time you visit, keep an eye out for wild birds that choose to live in this urban green space. One frequent visitor at many zoos is the black-crowned night heron. At the St. Louis Zoo, there's often one hanging around the outdoor penguin exhibit, hoping to steal a stray fish from the penguin's food. Elsewhere, night herons are after more than a quick meal. Since the late 1800s, a large rookery of black-crowned night herons has nested at the Smithsonian's National Zoo in Washington, D.C. Chicago's Lincoln Park Zoo hosts hundreds of night herons. And at the Detroit Zoo, several dozen pairs take up their summer residence in trees near the crocodile exhibit. Night herons love nesting near bodies of water, where they can catch fish, frogs, and other prey. So a zoo that has a pond or two nearby turns out to be a perfect spot for a night heron rookery. Wildlife-friendly landscaping can create opportunities for species that struggle to find habitat elsewhere. For black-crowned night herons, a city zoo can be home sweet home. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
you may never have heard the word birthal.